Welcome to theconversation.org, making sense of these times.
Could it be? Yes, it could. Something's coming, something good. If I can wait, something's coming. I don't know what it is, but it is gonna be great.
This show is brought to you by MightyCompanions.org. And now your host, Suzanne Taylor.
I have a real treat for you this week. It was a treat for me. A friend of mine in Los Angeles named Roy Gibbon hosts a monthly networking luncheon, spiritual, growth-oriented types, at which I recently introduced the speaker. The speaker was Gail Bates, heretofore known to visitors to my website only as Madam X. Well, I liked her talk so much that I'm bringing it to you as this week's installment of our web radio show, Making Sense of These Times. If you're on my site, which is mightycompanions.org, you can get to Madam X from my homepage by clicking on to Conversations About Being Awake, where you can track the emails between us, which have been encouraging Gail to deliver this body of thought that, for the first time ever, she has spoken about at this luncheon, which I think of as quite possibly a next teaching or a next awareness for humanity in its evolutionary climb to full consciousness. I encourage you, if you are moved, to check out our websites. Hers is humanbeingbooks.com, and to let us know if developments with the Human Being Society, which is coming into manifestation now for active participation, are of interest to you. One of the things she said on this tape was, I'd like to sit down with a bunch of people and just be really honest about the fact that we're in the dark here. And that, in fact, is what we're going to do in Los Angeles. We're going to create a weekly get-together. So anybody listening to this from L.A. who might be interested, be in touch. But you have to bone up. You have to know really what this body of work is all about and that you really want to be part of it. You know, being in the dark doesn't mean we're groping. It just means that, as you'll hear her speak about, that there's a fundamental mystery and there's something about our aggressive search for answers and solutions that perhaps is not really the ultimate exploration, and that maybe if we're really honest about, or even more honest, let's say, about the fundamentals of being a human being, that we can strip down to something fairly simple that we can all rest in and grow from, which, as you'll hear, is the only task us human beings, according to her mapping of reality, are here for. We're growing creatures. Now, at the beginning of this luncheon program, you'll hear Roy Gibbon introduce me, and then he'll come back later to share the mic with Gail to ask some very pertinent questions. He did a good job. You'll hear a couple of other voices as well as people ask questions. Some of them are not very audible. Sometimes there may be little gaps where a question is just missing. In the way I've edited it, I think that the intelligence will flow. You'll really get the gist of what came out as a result of the Gail answering the questions, whether the question's there or not. And if you're not paying too close attention, you probably won't even notice. Now, another piece of information is that when Gail talks about Bob, Bob is her husband, Bob Bates. They've been married for, I don't know, 20 years or so. And he is a wonderful person in his own right. He runs a funded program, a model for what we should have lots more of. It's an art school in our inner city here. So now I'm going to turn you over to the tinkling of silverware. It's a luncheon, and everybody's eating. It's delicious, by the way. But as they're eating, they are just quite enthralled by this person who didn't even know if she was going to be able to deliver a speech. Believe me, that you're in on a coming out. This is a debut of the very, very magical Madam X. And so I hope you will have as enthralling a time with her as I had and as the luncheon guests had. So here we go, a luncheon with Madam X.
Suzanne's going to give a little intro to Gail, and then Gail, our featured speaker, will talk. Gail is not a, she doesn't speak normally. She's not like a seasoned lecturer, so we might have to help her and ask her questions and, you know, pull this story out of her. Here we go.
Well, I first found Gail about 12 years ago when she arrived in my mailbox. In some ways, she needs no introduction, because if you really thoughtfully, with an open mind, read her material, you will just have the same reaction I had, which is, what's that? But since we live in this crazy culture where we're bombarded by so many things, I had the privilege of having one card arrive in my mail, and it invited me 12 years ago to join the Human Being Society. It was the most charming, wonderful card. I don't know if she's got that specific one over there, but they're all charming and wonderful. And it just arrived, and on the back it said, call this number, her number. And I called, and no, there really wasn't anything to join. And why was she sending them? Well, she just thought she should. And so for 12 years, my mail, one at a time, I would get these amazing things from a person who wanted absolutely nothing. So that was really a wonderful opportunity to just tune in to the purity of the beauty of what this person is bringing forth out of some magical, mysterious connection she has to some other realm. And I think of her as very distinct from everybody else who, all the wonderful people who have wonderful connections. But this is so unusual in that really it doesn't want any. Who in this world doesn't want anything? It's just gratuitously, it's like random acts of kindness. Years and years and years of it. So this year something's taken a turn and she's available to investigate, you know, what more can we do? And it isn't her as some dominating force like me, the cheerleader, you know? No, it's just this energy of the most underlying truth before we even go to seeking enlightenment. Who are we? I mean, seeking is even something that is somewhat artificial because we're something else underneath that before we started looking for who we were. And this incredible being has the bead on that. So I've never heard her talk because she doesn't really talk, so I have no idea what she's, what you know. Although she's become, now that she's out of her 12 years of being in some kind of closet, I've had the opportunity to just fall in love with her as a human being. Well, I got invited to the first party that she was, a party? This person who didn't hardly exist was having a party? And I thought, gosh, I wonder who's going to be there. Will I know anybody at this party? And I went to the party, I discovered I knew every single person there. She's got this underground kind of antenna, maybe, for collecting the people who can tune into her. So some of them are sitting here today, and that was really a shocker, you know. I was with the family, little did I know. So maybe now this is the next branch. Okay, Madam X.
Well, as Suzanne said, I'm not used to speaking very much. But I will tell you a story. And it's the story that I have lived. I was born with a very strong impulse to be, but I was also born into a world which had an equally strong impulse not to be. And so an incredible friction developed, which is probably the reason why I never really did speak, but it started me on a kind of path of undoing, which lasted half of my life, undoing all the learning and the preconceptions and the cultural knowledge that I absorbed through my education and my family influences and my culture. For some reason, those things weren't satisfying for me, and this undoing just seemed to be the thing to do for me. So this occupied me for many, many years, and then it seemed at one point there was nothing left to undo. And I was kind of shocked, and I wondered, what now? And a door opened up to me at that point. And I was always been a curious person, so I just went right in. And I found myself in a completely different reality than what I had been experiencing in this physical realm. I found out later it's not really different, but its appearance is different. But the basic makeup of it is the same as what we have here and what we all probably know. But I was met there by a whole different culture of beings. They called themselves eternal beings, and they called this realm the timeless dimension, or eternity, because it was absolute nothingness. There was nothing there. There was no time. There was no space. There was no form. But in this nothingness, there is something. It's kind of hard to explain, but in the nothing is made up of nothings that are something. It's kind of a twist. We call them dimensionless units because they are timeless, they have no space, and they have no form. Yet they are units, and they have existence and presence, just like the dimensions of form do. So anyway, I absorbed this somehow, not intellectually, or not with my mind or with my senses, but somehow there was a communication between my spirit, which was existing in this realm, and these beings whose home this realm is. When I first went in there, it was like the most beautiful thing I had ever experienced in my life. It was like wonderful beyond imagination. It was like my whole life experience had been of such friction and discomfort. And then to be in this place of incredible freedom and wonderful beyond belief. And these beings were as wonderful as this place. And without anything happening, I just knew of their incredible wisdom. I was a stranger there, but they welcomed me, they took care of me, and they taught me everything about their culture. I thought it was the most wonderful thing that could ever happen to me, and I just absorbed it like a sponge. I thought it was just so beautiful. I would have stayed there, as far as I could think, I would have just stayed there. I would have never come here, because that was beautiful, and this was, to me, discomfort. But at a certain point, they said, well, what we do is, as a culture, is we travel through all dimensions. Our mission is to teach the beings of all dimensions about the sphere of time, the order of the sphere of time, the way of growth in the sphere of time, because our purpose is to unify the awareness of all the forms in the sphere so that the sphere itself can realize its own oneness. And this is their mission as a culture. And so there are messengers to the other beings in all dimensions. And as I had joined their culture and I had become one of them, they made me a messenger. And then they said I should come here. So here I am. In the pamphlet that I sent out to you here, there's some diagrams of the sphere of time. And I'd like to just tell you a little bit about the order so you can understand a little bit about movement through time. The homeland of the eternal culture, the timeless dimension, is like it's like a link on the chain of dimension. So it's like a zero in number. And then there are all these other numbers. All the other numbers are dimension, and the zero is the timeless dimension. It's absence. It's absence, yeah. So in time, there's the passage from the zero, from the absence, and an expansion through all dimensions. Then there's the contraction back to the zero. And that's like one cycle in the growth of time. Now this process happens over and over and over and over again, and it creates this spherical form that is pictured in the pamphlet that I gave you. The growth in all forms, in awareness, in physical form, in whatever form, even forms we can't even imagine in this world that exist in different realms of dimension, all the growth happens in these cycles because it's this very, very, very fundamental cycle. In eternal culture, they've based their culture on a harmonious relationship with them and this process of growing through time. And it's this that they want to make all beings in all dimensions aware of, because it's this process, in no matter what aspect or level it exists, which is just an incredible variety throughout the sphere of time, but this growth process is what leads to the unity in the sphere of time and all the beings and all the forms and everything in it. So that's why it's helpful to understand the growth process, so that when you experience your own growing, you can become a more skillful artist at it. When you have a basic understanding of these cycles and the growth process, you can kind of know what's happening to you as you go along. And it can eliminate a lot of friction and fear and anxiety and discomfort, because when there's a trust that this growth process is going to do what it does, there's just learning. There's just learning. The mind can, if you watch it, if you are observant and you pay attention, it will teach you. And this is one of the things that the eternal beings taught me, was that life itself is the great teacher for all of us, for everything. The teaching is contained within the experience of living. The teaching is contained within the living that is your response to stimulation and the growth that's happening that you experience as yourself or the people around you or whatever you're experiencing. And the teaching is right there. It's so beautiful because it fits each person at whatever level or whatever their sphere of interest or whatever. It's perfect. It's always perfect, right? Just exactly for whoever, whatever, at whatever level it is, because it's completely integrated. So knowing this has given me a little bit different idea of and way of existing, a shift of value, because it isn't the static attainment or a static form or a static idea or knowledge or feeling or anything. It's exactly opposite of any kind of static attainment. It's growth. It's the passage. It's the movement, which is life becoming aware of itself and becoming unified to its ultimate that I am able to see, which is the unity of the whole sphere of time. That's as far as I can see, and that's as far as I know. But that of course is not the end of it, but that's far enough. That's far enough. But this passage of growth, it occurs in increments. These increments are like the most fundamental. I call it time because I think, to me, time is a fundamental description of this growth. Because even the timeless state, well, that's a kind of time, even though it's timeless. And because it can exist without form, it's really the most fundamental. But these increments grow in a progression, which means that the whole history that we experience here on Earth, the whole time of all time, it's all linked together. It's like a building that goes on forever and ever and ever. You know, it's all linked, it's all integrated, and the one thing is built right on the other and depends on what's below it, which is the reason why in eternal culture, strong growth is the value, because whatever comes from it is going to depend on it. If you create a weak link in your growth, you allow a weak link to happen in your growth, then it's going to break. It's going to break. And you'll have to go back and you'll repeat it. So in eternal culture, we learn to make that growth really strong, we learn to focus on the growth, not on the attainment, not on the possessing of the thing or the appearance, only on the growth. Because if the growth is strong, if the growth is true, if the growth is the true free expression of this natural process, then it's going right where it should go, and it's growing in a strong, strong way, and you won't have to go back. You won't have to repeat the lesson. And since my value is this overall growing, realizing in the biggest way, because the realizing and the becoming aware of the self, whether it's just an individual or it's a culture, it's a world, it's all time. That's where it's going, and that's what it's about. So if there's a focus on that, it helps it along. It makes it clearer. It makes it more powerful. It allows it to be more powerful. Well, all of this is like structure. This is our ideas of structure, but in internal culture, it becomes very, very practical. It becomes very, very practical. In daily life that I've been able to see, there's a lot of habitual things that they're taken for granted. They're totally taken for granted. And many of those things that we're building our cultural mind and our ideas and our awareness on are not strong. They're making great confusion. What I can see now is that people are struggling to reorder those things. One of the basic things that I see is our idea of, people are always asked, why? Why did this happen? Why did that happen? And underlying that question, why, is a really old idea of cause and effect, right? That the answer to the question why is what happened before it. That's why. If you know anything about growth in a big way, you realize really quickly that, well, that one thing leads to another down the line, down the line, down the line, into infinity, and you still are asking why. So that idea really does need to be examined, I think. And another habitual idea of comparison is very, very misleading, because in this growth, every little increment is unique. Like they say, every snowflake is unique. I mean, if every snowflake is unique, just boggle your mind with how unique everything in your individual life is. So if there's a comparison, where are we going with that? We're going into mass confusion. So to me, I know that there's generalizations and they can be valuable, but when it really comes right down to your own growth, it's unique. And part of what I've learned from studying the growth of time is that unique growth is the truth. And no matter what your friends or your culture or your time or anybody may say about it, that unique growth is truer than any comparison, any normal idea, or any generalization that can be made with the mind superimposing its ideas on that growth. So if there's a trust of this growth based on the knowledge of this growth, it will be allowed more and more to go on its way and become what it will. Then you can see how measurement is another idea. We're always measuring everything. You know, we think we're going to understand the world of form by measuring it. And I don't think this is true. These expressions and these unique forms are not about measurement. They have nothing to do with measurement. They're about motion. It's like, could you measure a ripple in the river? No, the river is not about the measurement of the ripple. The river is about this flowing thing, this progressing thing, this growing thing. The essence of its growth has nothing to do with any kind of measurement. It has to do with the progression of its forms. And good and bad is another fragmenting in consciousness. What I feel is becoming is unifying, is seeing without saying, no, not this, no, not that, just this. It's seeing in wholeness. That's a part of whole awareness and whole being, is seeing everything, everything, the good and the bad. And it all does work together in a really integral way, in an amazing, amazing way. But it does take a little bit of distance to get away from personal reactions to see. But it's interesting because the personal reactions are like little signs that show us these things about ourselves, so that if you're going along and you see something all of a sudden, or you hear something that you just want to say, no, 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 I don't believe it, it's not true, you know, go away, then what you're seeing is you're seeing your own limitation, and you're seeing the part of you that needs to be integrated. So when you begin to shift from attaching to your own reactions to learning from them, then growth really does start to open up. And the more you can include in your awareness, the more you grow in wholeness. In eternal culture, we see the design. We see the design of things. And we learn from seeing in these designs. We learn from not just intellectual, but by all the senses that we have. All the senses that human beings have, incredible potential for sensing. Not just words, not just ideas, but the body is, it's like all sense if you tune into it. That sensing, it's right, it's there, it's in us, it's the form. That grows too. So in developing all the potential of a human being, there is this growth in time to become, who knows, more aware, more sensitive, more understanding, more in whatever way, ways that I can't even think of, ways that I'm too limited to be able to say. So somehow this incredible variety that is all existence, even beyond the existence that we know on Earth, that we call our time, the whole sphere of all time is this variety and this uniqueness that's overwhelming to try and think of it. But if you can see it the way that they showed me to see it in the simplicity of this design, it's kind of those little wheels they give kids to ride on their bicycles, you know, at first, so that they can balance. Training wheels, yeah. So then, after a while, you get the kind of idea, you get the balance, and then you don't need it anymore. You're just growing, and you just have your balance, and you can flow and grow. To me, growing is the essence. The essence, what else do we have, you know? What else do we have? And that doesn't mean just individual growing. That doesn't just mean me. It means everything. You don't even have to have a relationship with anything. It's just existing and being sensitive and growing in whatever way that life presents itself, because it's going to present itself in all this variety that it is. So if you have too many ideas, then the friction comes in. Then the things like, oh, I can't deal with that one, or this one hurts, and stuff like that. So if you don't have too many ideas, it's a little easier to see and feel and respond to what you're presented with in your life. Actually, I've only been around in this, come back from this other world and trying to adapt to this time and this body and this culture again. And the human being society that Suzanne mentioned is what has emerged as to be like a step, to help teach us about unity. You know, this whole sphere of time maybe is too big. It's too advanced for right now, maybe. I don't know, maybe not. But the awareness of us as form, as forms relating to each other, as the same kind of form for all human beings, that has emerged for me as a way to help us grow towards realizing the unity just of us, which is a step. It's a step. And so I've been practicing it, and my practice has grown and to talking to people about it. But mostly, you know, I think it's like an individual, it's an individual and a universal thing. It's like we've all experienced the difficulties and the pain and the everything we go through in this life. And to not be able to see that when we see another person, or to exist in this kind of like, in this kind of a illusionary realm where we all say, well, we're all fighters and we're all tough, and we'll just play that game, and then we'll go back, we'll go to our therapists at another time, or we'll go to our doctors, or we'll go to our churches, or we'll pray, or we'll meditate, or whatever we do, kind of in secret. We're going to go to our jobs and we'll be tough. Well, I don't know. I don't know about that. I think, you know, just because we're at our jobs and we're tough, I mean, that doesn't make the vulnerability of us go away. And I think it needs to be brought out in the open if we're ever going to recognize and be aware of ourselves in a real and true way. All the time. Not just when we pray or when we meditate or when we're with our best friend. I mean, what about when you meet a stranger? Do you remember that, or you have a kind of any empathy that, gee, this person most likely has been through a lot of torment the same way as I have. And maybe even though they present a tough exterior, you know, maybe that's not the whole truth. What I've experienced in terms of growing and development is to bring to awareness a wholeness of not just the prettiest pictures, not just the toughest, the strongest, but also those ugly ones, you know, those ones we wish we could throw in the trash are the ones we don't want anybody to see. And it's all there, and it needs to be recognized. It needs to be recognized so that we don't have to like pretend and hide. I can see this is happening in the kinds of forms that are developing in our culture, but it seems like it's pretty small in the culture overall. It's like all these disguises and costumes and people are roughing up their feathers, you know. It's like, whoa, don't get near me, you know, I'm really tough. So anyway, that's my personal feeling. But I think maybe I've talked enough. And okay. Oh, Mitch says, is this world part of the other one? Yes, sir, they're completely integrated. The whole sphere of time is integral. And as I was saying, the growth of time through one dimension to another, through the timeless dimension, in and out, in a big spiral hole, it's all completely integral. This is a moment by moment attention. This strength, strong growth is moment by moment vigilance. It's kind of like being a guardian of the growth. The guardian isn't really interfering, it's just protecting the growth. So that's a good job I find to give the mind, to be the guardian of the growth, not the controller of the growth or the decision maker about the growth, but the guardian, the protector of this growth that comes from a deeper and more powerful place than the mind even knows about. Like if you have a child, well, that child has to grow, right? It's going to grow. It's unique. It's going to grow in its own way. But you're there as the parent to make sure that nobody comes with a gun and kills it if you can possibly help. The job of the guardian is not to interfere with this free growth that's happening. It's to keep other things, other influences, from interfering with this free growth. It's kind of a different job for the mind. But, you know, the mind needs something to do. I don't know, for me, that's a good job for it. Because otherwise it goes crazy, you know. It wants to do all sorts of stuff. And it's always wanting to interfere. It always wants to say, well, let's do it this way, let's do it that way. But there's a kind of peace you have to make. The individuality. In our culture, we have said that the individual, the ego, is what we want. You know, we all want to be individuals. We all want to develop strong egos so that we can go out there and compete and do all this stuff. But I think at a certain point when the ego is strong enough, it doesn't have to show its strength. And when it's strong enough and aware enough, it can see what is stronger and more creative and truer and powerful than it is. And that's when it becomes a guardian.
I want to take over just for a little bit here. So you've been talking a lot about what they've been teaching you. Could you possibly share a little bit more about your personal experience? Let me see if I got this correct. A part of your being split off and went to another dimension, and a part of you is still living in this physical world, functioning in a day-to-day reality. Could you talk more about the incident that led up to this and what it was like to live in two separate realities at the same time?
Well, it's kind of funny to explain because my whole awareness just left my body. And really, I don't know what my body was doing. I had moved out into a very isolated place. My body was living in one place, and my awareness was living in another. But, you know, that was fine. That was fine. No. At that time it was there was no problem at all with that. But the problem came when the two came back together. That's when the problem came. Because the spirit no longer fit the body. And when they came together, it was like two foreign gears coming together. And when they met, all the teeth of the gears got crushed. And everything just disintegrated. And that's when that happened, when they came back together. What happened was I became non-functional. I couldn't do anything in terms of my body. I mean, my awareness was still there, but the body couldn't function with it. I spent the last 20 years rebuilding the whole body to make the body work with the spirit again. That did involve a lot of hospitals and drugs and, I mean, the whole thing that you're, I think, talking about. So it wasn't painless.
So was your body aware that a part of you is in the other world? Yes?
Yeah.
And was the part of you in the other world aware that you had another life in this body here?
No.
Oh, so it's one way.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Actually, thanks to Bob, my body survived. I was doing this other thing, and I wasn't taking care of, you know, I wasn't doing the bodily things. The only bodily things I was doing was, I was like receiving all this stuff, this information, and putting it into form, but that's about it. As I said, I had moved to an isolated area. I didn't know anybody except for Bob, and I just stayed that way.
When the beings in the eternal culture told you it's time to come back into this world, did you know what they were talking about?
I had a vague idea. I had a kind of like a dream idea. But I didn't have any detail of anything. I just had like a direction and a mission. And I'm having to discover it all as I go along.
Now, when people translate something, like, say, from Chinese into English, the languages are so difficult, it's really hard to get an exact translation, or from English into Chinese, especially for something like poetry, which is dealing with rhythms and and structures and images and multiple meanings, and there's no way they can come from one to the other. And if that's so difficult just to translate from one language to another, how much more difficult is it for you to translate these concepts or images or energies from that dimension to this dimension? And do you think it's a very accurate translation, or is it way off the mark no matter what?
Well, it is very, very difficult. The translation's very difficult. It's been extremely, extremely difficult for me. And as you know, like speaking has been just like talking to another person and trying to understand what they're saying and trying to be able to respond to and have a conversation was just like an overwhelming difficulty. It's more different than a cultural difference like Chinese and American. It's even more and more extremely different. And so it's been very, very difficult. Very difficult.
Have you met anybody who's had a similar experience?
No, I haven't.
How do you experience people
versus the way you used to? The question is, how do you experience people now as opposed to how you used to? When you say used to, do you mean before this happened or? A few years ago, it's becoming clearer. I'm getting a lot more information about what I'm experiencing in terms of other people. It's becoming clearer. At first, it was so confusing. I just had no idea. I mean, I could hear words, I could see somebody talking, but it was like it was so confusing that nothing made any sense. And I guess that's one reason why I couldn't really speak with anybody, and I had such difficulty forming any kind of a relationship because I couldn't understand what was going on. But just by keeping exposing myself little by little, you know, it's a gross process. It's easier now, but it's still not easy. It's not easy. People are communicating all the time and talking. You know, I wonder if other people have any idea of the confusion that happens, you know, trying to understand really what this other being, where they are, what they're saying, what they're feeling, what their life experience is, you know, when they're saying these words. And it seems to me that there is so much confusion. Well, I know there's confusion for me, but I always wonder why doesn't anybody else seem to be confused? Why am I the only one that seems confused about this? Maybe you could tell me. I mean, we're here, we're alive, we're these living creatures, and you know, we have all of this knowledge that kind of covers up the fact that we really don't have a clue about, you know, what we're doing here, and you know, we're so busy doing all this stuff, and what are we really doing here alive, you know, and we're these amazing, amazing creatures, and all this stuff is happening to us. And where's the questions? Where's the mystery? You know, what do we really know about all this stuff? This is life. Well, I'd like to sit down with a bunch of people and just be really honest about the fact that, you know, we're in the dark here. As much as we know, we don't really know what we're doing, or we don't really know anything. All our knowledge just covers up the fact that we just don't know. And it's an uncomfortable kind of vulnerability and humility. But it's all our, I think, unless somebody knows, you know, has an answer, really deep answer, that I think it's the human predicament. We have consciousness, and yet we can't really know. And it's frustrating to say.
Last year, as I was just getting to know Gail, we were taking part in a small spiritual workshop. There were maybe eight of us there, and it was a interactive workshop. But Gail was going through a period of silence. She wasn't talking. So it made it an interesting workshop. And I think you stayed on this silence for, what, like 3 months or something? Is that right? 3 or 4 months or longer, and I wonder how this might relate to your unfolding or your understanding from this world.
Well, it helped me a lot to be silent. because in my first interactions, I was receiving all this input, and it was going into my mind, but I didn't have any idea what it was or how to work with it or anything. And so my mind was becoming as confused as what I was perceiving was confusion. And then the silence came along. It gave me a distance from myself. Instead of responding to every little bit of information that I had, I was just watching it all. While I did that, it helped things become clearer. That process started like weeding out a lot of superfluous stuff, you know, that was just really not important, not necessary, or it was just like the stuff of life that was just had just kind of like got into me and I'd become a part of without really making any kind of decisions or choices about it. So the silence allowed me to kind of order and get rid of a lot of stuff, and it just things got clearer after that. I got clearer about me relative to that whole thing of mind going on.
During that period, Gail and I are friends, and she used to write notes, and we'd be sitting at dinner, and she'd write a note, and then I'd speak back. And then pretty soon I noticed that I wasn't speaking anymore, and I was writing notes back to her. But what was really interesting was that there was a clarity and a truth and an honesty that was coming in the communication that wasn't there when we were speaking. It was very interesting. It was like the clarity that she was just talking about came forth through both of us when we let the words go and communicated at a written level.
Yeah, I don't know. This is a good question for you, to ask you people. But when I write, a lot of the things that are in my mind that maybe I would say if I was talking, it kind of bypasses it. You know, like, have you ever written in a journal or a diary? And really your essence kind of comes. Is that anybody else's experience? And so that's what happened when I was just making little notes to people. It's like a lot of the superfluous talk didn't happen, and just the most essential things that were necessary for real growth and the real things that needed to be responded to came up. And that's all.
So you just mentioned that you're still receiving information from this other world?
Yes, of course. That's the growth line. That's the growth line.
And along that thought, are they also in communion with you here, do you think? So it still has a communication going on.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
It's all integrated. It's completely integrated. It's the idea that we have of our individuality that keeps us from knowing how connected we are. That's all. That's the only thing. Look, you're not planted in the ground. You're not growing in the ground, so you don't see maybe that you are connected to this whole life experience. But you are. You're like a bird or something, you know? And you're as connected. It's just the mind that is refining its vision of that connection and that process. That's all.
You know, I'm just going to suggest to you that if you find her process interesting, on my website I have a whole dialogue of our communications back and forth in email, which is essentially me saying to her, yes, yes, this is beautiful, tell me more. And so it's really, when I read it, it just sends me to, you know, to read this stuff that's posted. So if you're interested, you know, you can just read it on the website.
Is your website linked up?
My website's called mightycompanions.org, so when you see that on her website, link over and you'll read our dialogue. You read a lot more about this process that she's in.
What else does her job as a messenger entail?
I mean, besides talking about this, it entails practice and personal learning. Probably more, well, it's as important in terms of the whole work. It's a part of the whole work. It's my own personal practice. That's how I learn and grow in terms of becoming more expressive and communicating and connecting more with people and in realizing the message. So I'm devoted to practice. I think that's the most important thing, practice.
What do you practice here?
I practice conscious growth. I practice sensitivity to the growth process. I practice allowing the growth process to be me. And I practice in my expression, I hopefully am practicing nurturing that in others and in my surroundings and my environment and in the time that is around me. Because I think that's the most important. That's really all we have.
Okay, we've gone on a very long time here, almost 2 hours. So I want to thank Gail very much for this presentation, being willing to talk to this crowd here that you mainly don't know, and this loud, well, it's gotten quieter now, but it's usually very loud in here. I wanted to mention those booklets on the table there are all free, so please, you know, take some. And there's a booklet there on the right of the table for names and addresses. So if you want to get some of these things in the mail periodically, these little gems from Gail, put your address down there and check out her website. And thank you so much. So next month, our speaker is Marjorie Jackson. And she teaches Qigong, Tai Chi, yoga. She does spiritual counseling. She has metaphysical classes. That's next month. Usually the talks aren't quite this long, but thank you so much. For someone who's shy, you had a lot to say, so thank you. I want to thank the Blue Pyramid Restaurant. And today's food was very, very good, so thank you so much. Thank you, Abdullah.
Thank you for listening to the conversation.org, making sense of these times. Now that you've heard from us, we'd love to hear from you. Click the feedback button on the show's webpage and share your thoughts. We'll be posting new shows approximately once a week. If you would like to be emailed when new shows are posted, let us know. This show is brought to you by MightyCompanions.org, dedicated to encouraging the awareness of ourselves as a one life and providing a meeting ground for those who share that awareness.